We're having a special class to try and address some of the points that I think need to be addressed when a person is going through the process of tshuva, when a person is going through the process of gerut. And in truth, we should really have a series of classes on this point, but I wanted to touch on a few points which I think might have been overlooked, and I think every person has to think about and incorporate into his plan of moving forward. Every person is supposed to have two notes in his pocket. One pocket is supposed to have a note that says, what am I worth? In this whole galaxy and everything God created, what am I worth? And when he starts being haughty, he should look at that piece of paper. Where did I come from? Where am I going? How much did God leave me to live? What are my duties here? How am I living up to my duties? What am I really worth? But in the other pocket, he's supposed to have a note that says the exact opposite. He's supposed to have a note that says, God created this whole galaxy, the whole world. Everything was created just for me. I must be very important. I must have very important work to do in this world. God created the world for me. That's a balance that we're supposed to have in this life. And it's the balance between recognizing the importance that God gave mankind, humanity, and every individual, and every individual has his duty and his job, which no one else can perform. As we saw in the first verse in Tehillim, David HaMelech discusses, Torahto. Every person has his own personal Torah. When we start learning Torah, it's Torah Hashem. We're learning God's Torah. As we grow in Torah, every person has the ability to discover things in the Torah that no one else can discover. If you won't discover them, they won't come to the world. If you discover them, they'll come to the world. We each have potential that is there just for us. We have things we have to contribute to ourselves, to our family, to our neighborhood, to the Jewish people, and to mankind. We have contributions, potential that God gave us that no one else had. At the same time, we have to recognize that we have to be humble, we have to have humility. There's a balance. When a person does a drastic change in his life, chooses a new course for his life, so he looks at his past and he could say, that's not me, I'm a new person. It's customary that when a person does tshuva, he adopts a new name. Or a ger. And that's why people sometimes will change from their English name to their Hebrew name. It's a change. I'm a new person, fresh. It helps the person get different. At the same time, we did whatever we did in our past. We do have our history. And when we look at our history, we have to be balanced. We have to recognize that we gain certain strengths. We do have certain talents. We do have things that we gained from everything we went through. And at the same time, we also have certain habits and things that we have to overcome. There are things from our past that we can't just cut off our past. I often mention that I was a magician in my youth. So I did a lot of magic. I had suitcases full of magic tricks. So on the one hand, that's not something which is critical for who I am today, but on the other hand, it is a tool. It is something which I have. Whenever one makes a change in life, so it's tempting to say, I was born today, I'm a new person. And to an extent, that's true. One person becomes a ger, so he is a new person. The family members he had, to an extent, they're no longer his family. It's difficult for a person to cut off, and we don't force a person, don't talk to your parents again, don't talk to your siblings again, that's true. We don't do that, but at the same time, we do say halachically they are not his parents. Halachically, he's newborn, he's a new person, he's starting fresh. But that doesn't mean that the habits that we had before disappeared like that. It doesn't happen. We have a story in Tanakh about the most famous, pious, Gioris Ruth. She foregoes being the king's daughter. She leaves her father's palace, goes back with her mother-in-law to the Jewish people, to poverty, and merits to be the mother of King David, the great-great-grandmother of King David. She was very pious. We know she was pious. We know she had good intent. My brother often says, you can take the monkey out of the jungle, you can't take the jungle out of the monkey. We change environments, we change courses, but the experiences that we had in our youth, the experiences and the life we're used to living, it's difficult to take them out. Ruth comes to her mother-in-law and she starts going to look for a place where she could get food. They're very poor. They don't have food to put on the table. And the halacha says that when you go to a field, so as they're gathering the wheat, if they drop one or two stalks, the poor may take that and the owner of the field may not collect it. That's called leket. If the owner forgets a bundle, he may not go back to take it. We say, you forgot a bundle, leave it for the poor. That's called shikha. The corner of the field, the owner has to leave off one corner for the poor. These are biblical commandments, that there are parts of the field that have to be left for the poor. So she goes to a field to collect from the poor, and it turns out that it's the field of a relative of her deceased husband. And she tells her mother-in-law, you know, God just helped me out, I found a good field, and the lads there were very nice to me, the owner of the field is very nice to me, I'm going to keep going back and I'll keep collecting where the young men are harvesting the wheat. And when her mother-in-law answers her, she says, yeah, that's a great idea. And she answers her, she changes one word gently. She tells her, keep going back to that field, keep going back and that's where you'll get the food from. You go with the young girls that are working in that field. Ruth, as pious and as modest and as good a person as she was, to her, what's wrong? The men are working at the field. I'll go collecting after them. And her mother-in-law hears that and gently tells her, yeah, you keep going to the field, but she tells you go behind the girls. Our girls are harvesting in that field. Our girls are working, you stick to the girls. We notice that wonderful she is, didn't see anything wrong with going behind the men collecting. And Boaz tells her, the owner of the field, he tells her, I told my boys not to touch you. We see that the guys were like workers are nowadays. A good looking girl comes to the field, so you know what happens. So Boaz tells her, I told my guys they should be very careful to respect you. And nonetheless, her mother-in-law tells her, you go back to that field, you go with the girls and keep collecting. And she gently mentions that she should really be with the girl. That's something to think about. You have the mother of Jewish aristocracy, the mother of the Davidic dynasty, Ruth, Imashen Malchut, she's called, and you see that because she came from a certain world, her perspective was a little bit off. What are we going to say? We walk into yeshiva after seeing all the movies. We walk into yeshiva coming off a bus with all the advertisements and all the improper behavior we see on a bus. It's a little difficult to change perspective. We open the internet. What do we see? By the way, anyone who wants to switch to a Gmail account, just tell me. I'll send you an invite. I switch to Gmail because they're clean. You don't see improper pictures there. So clean? Anyone of us, you need to have an invite from someone. Someone there has to invite you. So my email is shylot7@gmail.com, S-H-I-L-O-T, the number 7, @gmail.com. Send me an email telling me you want to join, I'll send you an invite. Because that's why I switched there. We don't have to see these things. If a person can avoid seeing the advertisements on Yahoo, we should. In life, whether we like it or not, we're born into a cycle. We're born into a specific family. We're born into a specific part of society. If a person is born in Mozambique and all he sees is tribes fighting one another, and he grows up with a little piece of cloth around his waist, his chances of making it to Harvard are pretty slim. It's very difficult to break out of the enclave that life sets up for us. And part of what's amazing that any person that walks into this place is that people have broken out. They have said, I want to change life. Usually, you'll notice that most people do have some connection before they come here. Most people either have a father that's Jewish, or a relative that's Jewish, or friends are Jewish. There is some connection. But at any rate, a person has chosen to break out. It's very difficult to break out. And when we break out of the enclave that life has set up for us, usually we break out in small, minute points. To break out of the cycle that our families have set up is very difficult. Unfortunately, there's a huge tendency of children from divorced parents getting divorced again. As one friend of mine once told me, he said, I'm married, I have an amazing wife, and I'm very fortunate to have such a wife. But you know what? In marriage, things get tough. And every time things get tough, the first thing that comes to my mind is what I saw at home. Things get tough, you run, you leave. So I'm married quite a number of years now, but I have to tell you that it's difficult. And you think that it gets easier after 2 years because you're already here for 2 years. It doesn't. That's part of breaking out of where we were. Every person is going to have many, many points that that's where he came from. And that's true for a Jew, that's true for a person who's not a Baal Tshuva. But obviously when we're making such a big change in our life, so we're going to notice more points that are from our past that we'd like to change, that we'd like to break out. But we have to recognize that it's going to require a Herculean effort to do that. We're not talking about something easy. Our sages told us, Ezu Gibbo, Kovesh Yisroel, you want to know who's strong? That's someone who overcomes his Yetzer. That's someone who can say, I'm going to do what's right. That's not easy. That's not easy. That's why I said it before and I'll say it again. I feel like any person that walks into this room, I have to stand up for. I'm embarrassed when I walk in and you guys stand up. It's true. I'm here. I'm supposed to be representing Torah, and you guys have to stand up in honor of the Torah, not in honor of me. But I have a lot of respect for any person that walks into this place. It's not easy. And I think that you guys have respect for one another too. No one knows anyone else's story. And I don't know your stories either unless you share it with me. But I tell you that every story I hear, I almost fall off the seat. Yeah.
You told, I also know that when children come from divorced families, that there's a high percentage that they marry also divorced. Do you have any number?
I don't know numbers. No. I don't know. You could look it up. The statistics are out there. I know what I see also, but you could also look it up. You go on the internet. It shouldn't take too long to find.
And the person, what you think is, my parents are in a divorce, but they had a Jewish marriage. Is the person better than I have a kosher Jewish marriage? I may break.
For sure. That's what I'm saying. This has nothing to do with Jewish or not. This has to do with what we saw. That's why I began with that. We're starting a new life when we do tshuva, when we become a ger. We're starting a new life. But we can't erase the past. It's in our blood. It's not that we could say, that's it, I'm a new person, everything else didn't happen. It did happen. When arguments happen, whether we like it or not, we fall into that rut of what we saw at home. Sometimes we could say, that's one of the points that I'm going to do totally different than what I saw at home. Sometimes. But most things, we're going to fall back to what we saw. That's our default. If we think before we talk, and we think before we act, we can adopt new habits. And that's the next point. People come here with immense strength. And it's amazing. You see a person coming in with an earring, with tattoos, with his motorcycle gang. We've had guys who had a motorcycle gang rode up and came to visit him. Hey, this is your bacon drive? Sure. We've seen everything. And the guy comes in and he's sitting down to learn, and you see the strength. People come here with strength that you like, it's amazing. And it's like a flame that's growing and growing, and suddenly it's out. Because you can't build things on strength. Strength goes up and strength goes down. It's rare that you can find a person that has the strength to keep momentum going. In Judaism, we very often stress the ability to have hatmada, to have continuation, to have perseverance. I'm getting looks from guys here that I don't know how to interpret. I don't know what guys are thinking, but I just want to say what I always said before. I'm not talking to anyone specific. I always told you, I prepare the classes without one person in mind. So if this happens to talk to a lot of people on different levels and the reactions I'm getting in people's eyes, so don't feel like I set this up for you. I didn't set it up for any one person. This is for everyone. Me included. I always feel like it's, I wish I could sit over there.
How are you doing?
No, because it's like, what am I preaching to? I'm preaching to me no less than you. I also have to, we're all in the same boat. I can say that it helps. I have to think when I prepare the class, so I think about myself. It helps me grow. I got these are all points that are relevant to everyone. I hope, think. Hatmada, being able to continue, is at the root of true strength. A person can come in with a lot of energy, and energy goes up and energy goes down. I try to talk to guys. When guys stay here longer than a week, it's easier than guys who disappear after a week. When guys stay here longer than a month, it's easier than guys who stay less than a month. We discussed earlier tonight that there are ups and downs, and that's natural. How do you weather the storm? You weather the storm by working on a few fronts. A person can't do everything with strength. Certain things have to come from habit. The stronger thing in life is habit. We have to learn to form good habits. Rabbi Wein always used to tell us when I was in high school, form good habits. One of the habits he always told us is keep your hands in your pocket. Meaning, don't let your hands wander, touch everyone else's things, and be involved in 100 other things. What? There are certain things that we have to get into habits. We have to get into habits of being on time. We have to get into habits of prayer. We have to know that there are going to be ups, there are going to be downs, and sometimes it's better to have more gradual ups and avoid a very sharp down. It's normal that when a person comes in, he wants to do everything. When I first came to yeshiva, I used to get up at like 2-3 a.m. and sit down, learn, and conk out. Everyone else would come to Beis Medrash and I was sleeping. So I was learning since 2. So by 8 o'clock, I was wiped out. So come 8 o'clock, everyone starts the morning, say they're fresh, and I'm asleep. I didn't want to lose any hours of the night. I want to learn. It's normal. It's normal that when a person comes in, he tries to jump for everything, and he doesn't get it. Chazal taught us, tafasta mubelo tafasta. You want to grab everything, you're not going to get everything. You want to go to sleep late, get up early, not nap in the afternoon, learn another. You have to learn, but at the end of the day, you also have to rest. You also have to take breaks, and you also have to do other things. I always tell guys, take a break. If you have a break, go someplace, have fun. That's why tonight we didn't have class at 6:45. I want guys to have a chance to go out, get a breather. It's more important that growth should be gradual and consistent than that growth should shoot up and fall on its face. In my opinion, the measure of success at the machon is what kind of person is the person that leaves the machon. The measure of success isn't what a person does in here. In here, you're in a bubble. You're in a place where you're woken for minyan, you have mincha, you have marriage, everyone else is benching, it's very easy to join and do what everyone else is doing. The question is, where does the person go from here? That, in my mind, is a measure of success. And in my mind, part of what a person has to build are good habits and good priorities. Meaning, the fact that a person will put all his time into learning here is important. I'm not going to belittle that. But part of what we have to focus on is growing internally, not just growing with knowledge. That's why I always tell you, my classes will cover a lot of information. I don't know if there's another class that covers the parsha like we cover it. We cover the parsha with a lot of Rishonim. We cover it with a lot of Midrashim. We cover Halacha. We fly through Halacha. But I don't think my class is the most important. But quite the contrary. Because what will decide what kind of person you are and what kind of life you lead is not the amount of information you have. You need the information in order to perform. But it's the connection. How connected is the person? That's what's going to define it at the end of the day. Push comes to shove, you leave the machon, it's difficult to learn every day. It's difficult to go to minyan. It's difficult to sit down and bench slowly. It's difficult to stay at minyan after everyone else is finished because you didn't finish. There are a lot of difficulties. It's not easy. Here in the machon, it's built to be easy. Okay, that's what we're here for. But the question is, where is the person connecting? And that's why one thing we said is the question of handing. Two things, number two, is making the growth moderated.
When you say connected, you mean?
I mean connected. okay. So, you're right. I wasn't clear enough. I mean, on a few fronts. One, to feel connected to God. Two, to feel connected to Judaism. Three, to feel connected to what we're doing here. And this, by the way, for Gerim is difficult in the beginning. So many Gerim, when they start doing things, they don't feel connected right away. They feel like they're doing something external. And it takes time to feel connected to them. And I don't know how it works with Doom Tshuva. I assume it's all the same thing. You put on tefillin, are you connected to that? The performance of mitzvahs, putting on tzitzis every morning, the davening. Person doesn't have to daven so many hours. Person doesn't have to say every psalm in the Pesukei Zlima. We've had many classes about shortening prayer. But what a person says, you should be connected to. When I was a child, so when the spring break would come, summer vacation, so I didn't want to pray. So my father, I don't want to pray. My father said, what do you mean? He said, I got a lot of other things to do in my day. I don't want to pray. I don't have a rabbi telling me to pray now. How old is I? 7 years old, 9 years old. I wasn't interested. My father said to me, he said, fine. You don't have to say any prayer you don't want to say. One prayer you have to say this. You choose what you want to say. You want to say Matovu in the morning? I spoke Hebrew. My father said, you choose one, you sit down for 2 minutes, speak to the Creator. Doesn't matter what you say. You choose whatever you feel you connect to. So you guys are older. You're not a 7-year-old. You're not a 9-year-old. You have a responsibility to more. But you don't have to jump to doing all of prayer. You have to Shmoneh Esrei. You have to say certain blessings. There is a minimum. We have classes discussing the minimum. But what's most important is that at some point you connect. Sometimes it's difficult to connect without a chazan. With a good tune, you connect better. It's more difficult when there isn't a tune. So maybe a person should take a little bit of time to sing a certain tune to himself as he's praying a part of prayer in the room before he comes down to the Beit Midrash. When I say connect, I mean on the connect to God. I mean connect to the mitzvot. I mean connect to Judaism as a general thing, to the avira, the spirit of Judaism. We have guys who learn here for 2 years and then they date a girl. And they say to the girl, Pesach, I'm going to be spending out in Uzbekistan. I'm doing a research project. And the girl says, I don't understand. When we're going to be married, you're going to spend Pesach out in Uzbekistan? And he says, yeah. And she says, what do you mean? What about Pesach with the family? So he calls me up and he says, halachically, am I allowed to be Pesach in Uzbekistan? I have a project. It's very important. What's it going to be? Can I do it halachically? And my answer is, wait a second. Before halachically, what about your family? And so when I say connect, they also mean connect to the spirit of Shabbat. So you're home when you have a house and you're going to sing with your kids. Why are we singing in the beginning class? It's fun to sing. It's nice to sing. That's one of the reasons. But it's also because there's a certain spirit that has to be there. And that spirit has to permeate throughout what we do. So one person connects with a more serious person who wakes up in the morning and says Korbanos as he's getting dressed. And he's quoting Mishnah, he says he's on his way to shul. Fine, if that's how he connects, let him connect that way. Another person connects to the song. I'm not telling you how to connect. Each person on his wavelength, but to connect. If a person is a nervous person, so he could connect, just checking his tits all the time that they're not torn. Fine, I don't care how he connects. That's individual. But to connect. And that connection has to move over into the home that we built. Yeah.
The question answer thing
is not yet. When I was still yeah.
Kind of over the connection that if you see the back of Israel, do you feel closer to motion or if you see the land or
it's not something that has to be defined. What you're saying is nice. What I'm referring to are things that are more basic to how you're gonna build your home. To how you're gonna live your life afterwards. To go to a friend's wedding and dancing. And being happy. So it's true when a person is a bachelor, it's very difficult, especially when he doesn't see himself getting out of it, to be happy at someone else's wedding. So, but I'm not saying a bad example, but to be able to connect with the Shabbos meal, to sit at the Shabbos meal and enjoy not just the food, I'm not talking about the children, I'm talking about the spirit that's there. I'm talking about connecting to life as a Jew, life as an Orthodox Jew. Now, unfortunately, that is a point which is very hard to define, and a point which many people, when they do tshuva or when they do geras, miss. And then they build a home which is lacking the spirit of a Jewish home. Or the children at least don't feel like they have it, so maybe the parents live in their aura, but the children feel like they didn't grow up in a Jewish home. So this is a point which is what we're trying to tackle to an extent in our Binyan HaBayit. We're trying to tackle it to an extent with some of what we do on Thursday night. But in general, that's why I keep saying, go to people's houses for Shabbat. See what the Shabbat atmosphere is, connect with it, acquire it. So connect is on many fronts. That's why I said the general connect, but you're right, I should have broken it down. It helps to connect to a figure who is also going to be a mentor, someone to be with. Our sages tell us that Shlomo had a teacher who tried to kill his father, tried to bump his father, but he was a big sage. His name was Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was the head of the court. But he hated King David because he was from King Saul's family. And when King David was down and out, his son was rebelling, Shimi ben Gera chased after him throwing rocks, and he said, "Say, say, Isha damim v'isha blial, hey Shiva, and God paid you back for everything you did, you worthless person, you filled with blood, get out of here." And David's down and out. He's got saras, he's a leper, everyone keeps a distance from him, he's a nidui, his own son is trying to kill him, the Jewish people have tossed him out. He's at the lowest point of his life. God has told him, you sinned with Bathsheba. He just lost his first son with Bathsheba. The baby died 8 days old. He had one son raped another daughter. He's had real big troubles in his life. Things are going pretty bad. It's not so much fun to be King David at that minute. And along comes Shimei ben Gera, and he's stoning him and cursing him out. And when King David regained the throne, he knew that Shimei was a big Talmud Chacham. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. So Shimei messed up. Shimei had it in for David, and he let his anger out, and ultimately he was paid back for what he did. But David said, he's still the biggest sage around. He should teach my son Shlomo. So when Shlomo becomes king at 12 years old, he has Shimei right next to him, his Rebbe. And David tells Shlomo, he says, "Look, I took your private tutor Shimei, who's a big tzaddik, a big Talmud Chacham. He sinned. And if he's going to pass away a peaceful death, then he's going to sit in hell. And I don't want him to burn. So do him a favor, don't let him die a peaceful death. Ensure that he passes away a more violent death, an unnatural death, so that in the world to come he's clean." So Shlomo calls Shimei, and he tells him something which is brilliant. He tells him, "Shimei, you can do whatever you want, just don't leave the city of Jerusalem. You're here where the temple is, you're here where you could serve God, you're at the center, all the Jews come here 3 times a year, you have everything you need. Don't leave Jerusalem. The day you leave Jerusalem, you die." Now, our natural tendency is, if we come home and we see the garbage full, so we'll gladly take out the garbage. In walks our father and says, "Son, could you please take out that garbage? Dad, give me 2 minutes. I just got to finish something." What happened? We lost our freedom. Second someone tells us what to do, we don't want to do it. I want to feel like I can do what I want, when I want. The second ago I was going to do it. But the second my father told me to do it, I know what I want to do. I'll do that in 2 minutes. I'll do it. But give me just 2 minutes. That's why we say, "Gadolam tzuvem osem mishenom tzuvem osem." That if God commands us to do something, if I'm commanded, then I get more schar, so it's more difficult. I lost my freedom. God told me what to do. If I have no commandment, the person is blind, doesn't have to perform mitzvahs, he performs mitzvahs, he gets less from them, because it's easier. He doesn't feel like he has to. That's why it becomes much more difficult after you're a ger to perform mitzvahs. No, more difficult, because now you have to. So long as you're still learning, so that's fine, yeah. You could do it, you could not do it, so you do it, yeah. Second, you have to, it's a different story. It's more difficult. So David tells Shimei, he says, "Don't leave." And then 2 servants run away, and Shimei leaves Jerusalem to bring him back, and Shlomo puts him to death, and right afterwards marries the daughter of Paro. Yeah, he marries the daughter of Pharaoh. He married a non-Jewish woman. Shimi leaves Jerusalem. Shlomo gets word of that. He calls Shimi before him. He says, I warned you, the day you leave Jerusalem, you're high of Misa. You transgress what the king commanded you to do. That's the equivalent of rebelling against the king. Now you'll be put to death in payment for all the blood and harm that you did to my father. And then he puts his Rebbe Shimi to death. What follows? Next verse in the next chapter in Tanakh, Shlomo marries Pharaoh's daughter. Tell us our sages that so long as Shimi ben Gera was alive, so long as that figure Shimi was there living next to King Solomon, King Solomon wouldn't marry Pharaoh's daughter. The second he was dead, he married Pharaoh's daughter, who made him a lot of trouble. She liked it. She liked being next to him. She put a canopy, she took, had her servants make a sky of copper over him, so that when the morning would come, he'd think it was night and he'd stay in bed with her. So he couldn't tell it was day. So everyone's waiting for the temple to open, and he has the keys under his pillow. He's supposed to open the temple the first day, inauguration services, and he's sleeping late. He's staying in bed with her. An hour passes, 2 hours passes, at some point he gets out of bed, and he walks out, and along comes Yeruvim ben Nevat, and he starts cursing him out. Kedaberet flying the tet, the head of the tribe of Ephraim, starts wagging the finger. He yells at him, how could you do this? 3 hours into the day, almost 4 hours into the day, that's when we bring the sacrifice. That's why we derive from there the halacha, that one may bring the morning sacrifice till 4 hours into the day. Ordinarily it was brought shortly after sunrise. But on that day, for his pillow, the first day inauguration services, and they couldn't enter the Temple Mount, so it was brought 4 hours into the day. So from there we have the halacha that 4 hours into the day you're getting the morning sacrifice, and that's why we made daven the morning prayers, Tfilat Shachrit, till 4 hours into the day. But getting back to the point, that was just an example of the daughter of Pharaoh, how she made him problems. So, yeah.
And he said he has to get up at early, is that's the responsibility of Pharaoh's daughter?
No, it's not for her. I don't know if we could get up that late. We're allowed to get up to 4 hours into the day. If not for her, I don't know where things would be. Maybe we'd say within the first 4 hours, and we discuss how you factor those 4 hours, one must pray the morning prayer. So getting back to the story, why did he marry her, this troublemaker, this woman who caused him all these problems? Because his Rebbe wasn't around. And from there our sages teach us that if one should try to live near a Rebbe, he should have a Rebbe near him who he feels, you know, a little bit of fear from him. Shlomo could have killed him. He did kill him in there. But there was still a person who should try to find a Rebbe who has awe from him. I always tell guys that I believe you guys should find a rabbi who has a long white beard, not me, but you have a little bit of fear from. I don't think anyone fears me. Like, we have a good relationship, it's very nice, I'm not looking to be feared, but you guys should have a rabbi who you do fear, a rabbi who you stand up when he walks in because you're trembling a little bit. And the rabbis who I speak to, that when I talk to them over the phone, I can't sit down, I get up. The person's a tzal, when he'd answer the phone, I get up, I couldn't stay seated. Like, you have a war. There are people who you have a war from. You should find a rabbi you have a war from. So we said there's connecting, and part of connecting is also connecting to a rabbi and connecting to good friends. One of the big problems here at Machon Meir, guys leave the Machon and they lose contact with all their friends. They're back into their own scene again, and I think that's a big, big problem. I think that's something you guys have to take responsibility for, to maintain the network. You walked out of Machon Meir, stay in touch with the guys. You could also help one another. It drives me crazy. This guy calls me up and says, I'm looking for a job in computer programming. That guy calls me up and says, I'm looking to hire someone in computer programming. Why aren't you two talking? You learn together at Machon Meir. So I make the shit of it. It's very nice. But it's a pity. How come guys aren't networking? Why aren't you in touch with one another? You're looking for a job? Tell the other guys. You have a job to offer? Tell the other guys. Stay in touch. Guys go back into the same scene that they were in before they entered the Machon. And it's very difficult to maintain the things you've attained in the Machon. Whereas if you enter a community, you become part of a community, so it's much easier. You've entered a community, you're in Machon Meir. Stick to that community. Clear about connection? Yeah? Okay. No, thank you. I didn't think to address it. Yeah?
Fire, you're on a great Shabbat, and you'll have all that fire, and you got that. And someday you're like, I'm going to pretend all what I have, and I'm going to have whatever. And Monday you still feel like, yeah, I've got it. I'm still going well. But Wednesday, like, how did I get here? Right? Yeah, maybe you've fallen. Do you have any practical advice about how to keep that?
Two things. We, in our relationship to God, so Tanakh and our sages always equate it to a relationship with a woman. And maybe over here we could also learn from that. In relationships between us and God and between man and a woman, we find in Tanakh the concept of a brit, of a covenant. What's the concept of a covenant? That there's a moment of intense feeling, and you feel like this person is amazing, and you say, I want to hold on to these feelings. I think these feelings are true. I might not be able to connect to them at every moment in my life, but I want to hold on to them. So I'm going to marry this person. I'm going to make a covenant with them. What does marriage say? Even if things go bad, I don't leave you. We've made a pact. When you make a pact, what you're doing is you're saying, I want to hold on to the moment. I want to capture the moment. There's a moment where we have connection, where we want to stay connected, and I want to hold on to that. When a person has attained a certain height, so you'll ask him, why do you have to make a pact? If she's such a good girl, and things are going to be so good with her, what do you need a pact for? So a person who's practical will say, because I know that sometimes they're going to be down, and I know that sometimes I won't feel this way about her, and I know that in truth I want to hold on to what I'm feeling now. We can't really hold on to a feeling, at least I don't know how to do it. We can try and take some of what we've gained with us. So if a person feels like I had an amazing prayer here, sometimes a person can connect it to a tune. Sometimes a person can connect it to the fact that he woke up early and he showed up to shul on time. Sometimes we can find what the source is. And sometimes it's too many things put together that we can't find the source. But when a person does know the source, so then he can try to repeat it. He won't always have the same effect, but it'll have a similar effect many times. Sometimes a person can make a pact. Meaning he could say, I see that I learned all Shabbos and went so well, it gave me so much. From now on, I take upon myself, or a person shouldn't take a vow, but what he should like try to make a deal with himself. I am going to whatever it is that moves him forward. Could be a person feels like I worked at a soup kitchen all day Friday, and I came into Shabbos with such a feeling of satisfaction it made my whole Shabbos feel different that I had a hand in someone else having food for Shabbos. So I'm going to make an effort to get to that soup kitchen always. And a person can sometimes say, and I'm going to do it even when I have a job, even when I have a family, I'm going to do it. A person can say, it's the learning, it's that cheer I went to. Usually it's something unusual that we went. It's the shul that I went the extra mile in the cold to pray at. That's one thing. Aside from that, we have to try to find the things that pull us up. Sometimes it's a good chavrusa that we enjoy. Sometimes it's learning things that we enjoy. Sometimes it's learning at the right time. Some people have tried getting to bed early and waking up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and learning. And they found that those hours when there's no one around and all you have is the Gemara and you are the most beautiful hours of the day. People have to search and see what are the things that are going to trigger it. And people should also see what are the things that trigger the downs. Very often it's lack of order. When we don't have a schedule, when this thing pulls me here and that thing pulls me there, and I should have been learning Gemara now, but I was reading this thing on the web, or this article that's posted on the door, I was talking to this guy in the tea room, that's what pulls us down. And once we're on this point, so I want to mention something that one of the guys from the Machon emailed me recently. He said that guys should consider speaking with Litman, with whoever their Rebbe is, taking more time to learn on their own. He claimed, I don't know what the schedule is like today, he claimed that guys don't have enough time to have personal growth. So that's something which you guys should speak to. Whoever is your Rav in Gemara, or in whoever is with you, let them fight your case with you. Obviously, the Mahon has to maintain a structure. The Mahon has to offer guys as many shirim as possible. But at the same time, you should have someone who you're working with to try and set up your schedule, to try and set up your growth, and speak to that person about it. That's something which you have to understand the flip side of it. When the Mahon gives a lot of free time, they hear about guys out in Ben Yehuda hitting the town. So there's a balance. On the one hand, we want guys to have freedom, we want guys to take a break, and on the other hand, if we know guys are going to learn, but the question is, can we have a structure which gives so much freedom? And you have to have, you're an institution, so you have to figure out what's good for the institution. Even though sometimes for the individuals, different things would be better, but that's why you should speak. Each person should have a rav that he's close to, speak to that person and think with him how to set it up. There should be ways of setting it up. We used to have a class every few months, setting up your free time, thinking through what you should have in your free time, depending on where you're holding. I didn't hear that guys were interested in it, so we didn't have it recently, but... we'll see. You guys are interested, we could do that again. Like, we could take a Thursday night and work on that. Okay. The next thing we're going to talk about is something which is uncomfortable for me to mention. It's going to be uncomfortable to hear. It's important. Huh? No. Being a balanced person. On the one hand, a person wants to grow, and a person should grow. On the other hand, if a person tries jumping too far, too fast, and he boomerangs and goes back and forth, it's not good. Better moderate growth with consistency than going back and forth. I always tell people, if you came to Mahon Meir, you're amazing. You also have to ask yourself, are you normal? You made a big change in your life, right? You made a big change in your life. Are you going to make another big change in a week? Are you going to make another big change in a week? You stop and said, I'm coming here. I'm wrong. Okay, wait, are you doing this? Is this balanced? It has to be balanced growth. We're not looking for frum mishugon. We're not looking for people to be very religious and be crazy. It's not what we're looking for. We're looking for people to be balanced, to be educated, to grow. What does the word chinuch mean? Chinuch doesn't mean educate. Chinuch comes, it's a borrowed term for education. Chinuch means inauguration. Chinuch means to start using something in a certain fashion. To start the inauguration of something's going a certain route. When we talk about chinuch, we're trying to start a path here at Mahon Meir, but that path has to be a balanced path of growth. And it has to be a continued path. It has to be a path. So we're starting. Get into good habits here in the Mahon. But the question is, what are you going to take with you when you leave? On the one hand, we say take advantage. This is, you're in a bubble. You can take advantage. Learn all day. Put everything you got into it. But you should also focus on how can you take with you when you leave from here. And part of it, that's why I tell people, try to set up in your day certain things that will be with you after you leave the Mahon. If you say you learn 2 halachot today, if you say you learn the parsha that Ali every day, it's not enough that when you're in Mahon, you're putting all your time into learning. You should also try to start forming habits which will be with you when you leave here. So if you're going to say, I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, good. Get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Make it to minyan on time. Whatever the habits are, they should be habits that are with you when you're not in the Mahon. When you're Shabbat away from the Mahon. When you guys go home for a break. I tell guys before each break, you want to know how you're doing at the Mahon? Look at yourself during the break. What did you do during the break? Did you wake up on time? Did you learn during the day? This is what your life is going to look like when you leave the Mahon. Because at some point you leave the Mahon. How are you going to be? What's your life going to be like after the Mahon? What are you going to take from the Mahon? What's going to go with you? That's where you guys have to judge. It's your life. We're going to try to get as much tools as we can, but you have to grow. I'm talking to a group here where some people just walked into the machon, and some people are on their way out of the machon. Some people have been here a month, some people have been here a year. Obviously, if a person is fresh to the machon, so with time, this is what will develop. We're not talking about people who are starting out. When you start out, okay, so what you have to do is put your full time into learning, but with time, you do have to work on these points. You do have to try to ensure that your growth is balanced, to ensure that it's continual, to ensure that you have atmada, to ensure that you're forming good habits that will be with you after you leave. I want to end with one point. There's a lot to discuss. We've scratched the surface. A different time maybe we'll continue. I want to end with one point. There's a word that you guys should know. It's called simcha. And loosely translated, it means happiness. But in truth, simcha is more than happiness. It has a deeper meaning than happiness. In Hebrew, we have many words to describe happiness. There's simcha, there's chok. There are many words that describe a person's happiness. And simcha has a specific meaning. It is important that we maintain simcha. It is difficult to maintain simcha. Part of growth is frustration. Part of growth is frustration with one's past and one's present and sometimes in one's future. But it is very important that a person maintain simcha. And it is often a grow less, but grow with happiness, grow with simcha, rather than grow more and not have simcha. Thank you very much. It's important to sing. Said that sometimes, often, it is advisable that a person have less growth, but the growth be with simcha, rather than have more growth and a person isn't whole with it and he doesn't have simcha. The simcha is key to a person's growth, key to a person's maintaining growth. And if a person feels like he's growing and he doesn't have simcha, he has to ask himself why. And frustrations, there are going to be. If you're growing, there are going to be frustrations. Very often, every day, a person has frustrations with where he was yesterday. We have to work on it. We have to figure out what's at the root of it. There must be simcha. Simcha is part of, and this is, by the way, part of the difference between Judaism and Christianity. If you want one of the keys that guys mentioned, this is a key point in Judaism. This isn't the point from Hasidism. It starts in the Torah. We try to have a positive outlook and look positively to the future and at the present and have simcha, whatever we do. If you'll think historically about Jewish life, you'll see the beauty of the mitzvot and the takanot that our sages implemented. In the worst time, in the worst ghetto, every Jew is drinking wine. Not wine, then schnapps. Friday night, he is king. He has a candelabra. He has two candles shining on his table. Could be that all week long he's being beaten by non-Jews, and all week long he's suffering, and he's having all the problems that Jews have had throughout history. He doesn't know how he's going to make ends meet, doesn't know how he's going to pay rent, how he's going to marry off his daughter, what he's going to do. But come Shabbos, he's king. He has a white tablecloth. He has challah freshly baked that his wife baked. He has a fresh kugel. He has chomp. Where does chomp come from? Chomp was the cheapest food in Russia, in Europe. Chomp was beans. Everyone could afford beans. That was chomp. They couldn't afford anything else. So they had chomp. What else? Potato cooker. Yeah, that was also cheap. Potatoes. That was the cheapest. That was like the cheapest commodity. So everyone had on Shabbos chomp and potato cooker. Why? Because that was the cheapest thing around. That was the idea of chomp. You had mean chomp. You didn't have mean chomp. That was a question of how wealthy you were. That was the idea of chomp. But every Jew is king. And the God gave us throughout the year Yamim Tovim. We have holidays. We have festivities. It's part of being Jewish. You wake up in the morning. You go to shul. You're with other people. You, before you go to sleep at night, you go to shul, you're with other people. Judaism sets up our life that we live it communally and we live it happily. And when a person joins, when he does tshuva or when he becomes a ger, he has to recognize that that's part of life. Sometimes a person feels like, I got my job, I gotta go, I gotta make my ends meet, and he detaches himself. And part of the reason he detaches himself is because he never really connected. And that's part of what a person has to learn here at the Machon, to connect and maintain that connection. Here in Israel, fortunately or unfortunately, the shul plays less of a role in the community. You live in a yeshuv, so the yeshuv gives you a feeling of community. You live in the city, you've got a problem. There's very little sense of community here, as opposed to Chutzai. But you find the shul where you do have that sense of community. Even here in the neighborhood, there are one or two shuls where you have that. It's important. So, to summarize what we discussed today, we discussed the importance of breaking out of where a person was, recognizing that life has enclaves that every person begins in, and person has to know that his past is always going to be his past. There are things to take from the past and there are things to leave behind. We always will have our past and we have to know to deal with it. We discussed the idea of tshuva, or going back to what really is our natural way of going. The difficulties of maintaining balance, going up and down. We discussed the importance of connection, connecting be to the mitzvot, to Judaism, to Hashem. We discussed the concept of chinuch, forming good habits. We discussed the importance of shul. We discussed the importance of happiness. That's just a quick overview of what we discussed today. B'zrat Hashem, we'll try to continue in the future. I hope we can continue b'simcha.